transmission is
coming to you from deep in the jungles of Central Maine. You are about to get high on spirit.
Here we are to discuss androgynous forms of enlightenment.
Androgynous forms of enlightenment.
Endogenous.
Well, yeah, so the topic of tryptophans came up.
Tryptamines,
yes. Not the stuff that's in turkey that makes you sleepy.
Although that is a precursor to
yes, that is
the more fun ones, the more complicated, structured ones.
So tryptamines and enlightenment, yeah? How are they related, or are they?
Well, I mean, they definitely open up the light.
Well, to anyone who's experimented with them, this is a common recurrence, right?
Yeah.
So I know for me, my first experience with psychedelics or tryptamines, right, was with LSD at age 16. And during that experience, I recognized intuitively, quite, you know, directly, that there was more going on to life, to this experience, to what we call reality, than I was previously aware of. You know, like much, much more going on.
Yeah.
So in that sense, yeah, there was definitely an awakening of sorts, for sure. Mm-hmm. I felt this sense that, like, you know, that, like, so much that I've been taught was nonsense, was, like, utter bullshit. And, like, that the way that we interacted in our culture, there were so many things that were, like, glaringly incorrect, you know, in a sense, and that there was, like, a much better way. I did experience, you know, a deeper felt sense in my body. I don't necessarily remember having the realization that, like, oh, this is my heart awakening. No, I didn't. I was too dense at that point, but I definitely noticed a tremendous increase in energy and a felt sense of, like, euphoria, like this well-being. It wasn't like it didn't feel foreign or alien to me, you know, in that sense. That inner sense of well-being felt quite natural. Nothing like being on a fucking opiate or something like that, where you're numbed to your feeling. This was much more a heightening and a deepening of my sense of what I was.
I mean, just to speak on the opiate thing, though, I mean, I think you're speaking of a refined version. You know, something that's been refined in a laboratory, it sounds like, because, you know, when you go into an androgynous opiate, that is like the feeling of, like, coming home into yourself. Like, we're in a state of deep prayer and communion.
We create dopamine as well, isn't it?
So,
or it activates on the opioid
and
receptors,
yeah,
right?
Endorphins and whatnot.
And that's a good point. So, no, I was definitely referring to the more pharmaceutical grades.
Yeah, because when you go back to the plant world with it and you're consuming a poppy, like, there's this natural, you can't eat too much. You're going to puke if you do. And there's this relationship there that's built where I've spoken with several people that have grown them in their gardens and just eaten them and experienced the pain relieving benefits, the tonic benefits over time, and have eaten them throughout the summer on a daily basis and never experienced any sort of withdrawal afterwards, dependency, or any of that phenomenon. That's something that was developed later through taking all the other stuff out of it. You know, trying to refine it into this one thing.
Yes, and
where
isolate it.
When it's taken in its whole matrix, then it seems to bring in a feeling of wholeness.
People talk about 5-MeO-DMT in a similar way. They say some people claim that the lab-produced stuff, right, lacks a certain spirit.
Yeah, I mean, and that could be their And I'm not going to argue
then
with
that.
Then
that which comes directly from the toad,
sure,
right?
Sure,
which is where 5-MeO-DMT comes from, the Sonora desert toad.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not to say that I can't understand where they're coming from or relate, yet at the same time, you know, it is all of nature. And when we do partake of these, the 5-MeO-dimethyltryptamine in particular, with very deep sincerity from the heart, and I don't particularly know if it matters its origin, if it's really pure, that there that the spirit is invoked inside it.
That's what others claim as well. So some just claim that no, the raw, like lab created, is the best because it's also the most sustainable. You know, it doesn't do harm to the toads and things. There's not over harvesting and all that as well.
But the toads like it though. Like friends that are down there with and having relationships with the toads tell me they hop right up on their porch and they milk them and they run off and they come back a few days later and they do it again. Like it's not harming the toad when it's done with respect to the toad.
So and you're right. So not necessarily over harvesting the venom. You know, which contains the substance, but unsustainable,
like taking them out of their natural environment in
large amounts that are unsustainable.
Happening at all, or
I don't
if it's
know.
Like something
that's
imposed upon
well,
the whole thing. Like, oh, we're always doing
it.
Something bad. You know, it's like I don't know. Maybe it's possible.
There's been some debate about it. For sure, it's something to be aware of.
It does seem like the toads like it, though. It is like this pimple on their back when it's done gently with care, with in a massaging handle. It's like it has a release for the toad.
I guess what this gentleman, the one I can't recall his name, scientist who was for the lab produced varieties, because he was so incredibly amazed at the benefits and what it has to offer us, that he wanted it to be available worldwide en masse, and that there was no real current way to do that sustainably by harvesting from the toads. So he was saying, I think that the bulk of it should be made, and sourced that way.
I wonder what he means by lab made. I mean, he's thinking like just directly derived from like a petrochemical. Because if it's like synthetic, that's what they're saying, it was made from an oil base. Because, I mean, I don't know, I guess it's just my somewhat aversion that maybe it's something I need to get through. Because the oil is of the earth, and when she's cast upon the land, it's rainbows. That's what it looks like from the sky. And who am I to cast judgment? But there are lots of other plant sources, tree barks, grasses that, I mean, it's a byproduct of the lumber industry in Peru. The varola bark is something that is just turned into mulch.
So there are lots of ways that we could look into sustainably farming and harvesting.
It's not even about sustainably harvesting. It's just about gathering it and allowing that it to be utilized and appreciated.
Well, what should we appreciate about it? I mean, what are the benefits? Because we're talking about enlightenment here in tryptamines.
I mean, it is totally clearing and cleaning. Like I feel without pain afterwards, and I feel coherent in mind and heart. There's a connection to body that is akin to a long time in a cold shower. I mean, for someone that finds health benefits in it, there are lots. For someone that doesn't want to find health benefits in it, they're not going to find any. But it has been used for longer than there's been history to induce deep states of communion for hunting, for ritual, for knowing which crops to plant.
Well, a lot of people refer to it as the God molecule, And so DMT, the spirit molecule, but the 5-MeO-DMT, more the God molecule, because it puts you in touch. And this, I cannot speak from experience, and I've only experienced DMT in its other various forms. But so, you know, you can enlighten us perhaps. But the common thread, right, that I've found is that opens up white space, so it's not so much content focused, it's more experiential in a contentless way, right? Until perhaps a deep communion and connection with the divine directly is experienced.
Yeah, for me, it takes me to a deep place of peace. You know, yeah, there's very little story, there's very little color. There's a, for me, there's a coming in and a surrendering to allowance of this feeling, because it's all consuming, you know? Completely, like, what I know of myself is gone for some period of time that I cannot track, you know? And then there's a, for me, there's always a prayer, because if you really get it, you wonder if you've done it that time. You know, if you're coming back. So there's a prayer of allowance and being, and then a resting inside. It feels like I'm being held by all the lineages that come before me and everything around me.
But that moment of surrender, is that what you're, is that what people might call ego death?
I think it could be.
Yeah, there is, again, as I said on an earlier podcast, you know, about that sense of trepidation, you know, like almost as if you're standing on a precipice, you know, about to just leap.
Yeah. No, in 5-methoxy-DMT, you know, was traditionally done in native cultures, insufflated. A long snuff tube. And I think there's a mirror reflection on how it's produced androgynously through deep breathing, such as the Wim Hof method.
Okay.
Or anytime anyone chooses to run or breathe deeply, that there's a natural thing that the body does in that deep breath that helps produce 5-methoxy-DMT.
I was not aware of that, and had not, that information had not come across me. So, endogenously produced 5-MeO-DMT. So maybe I have experienced it.
Yeah, I mean, say you run, you know, enough so you pass out. There's, if it could be charted, I'd be willing to put money on it that it's flowing through your system at that point. You know, it's like,
It's something
that
anytime
that there's like a near death type of thing, it's involved in there. But that's more of a DMT type of thing than the 5-MeO. Like the DMT is when you've already like gone through. Like the DMT is like everything's like flashing before your eyes really quick, and you're like making amends, and you know, sending love towards all the beings that are left behind. Where 5-MeO-DMT it was traditionally used as a very daily tonic in a lot of cultures, in the Mayan culture and the Amazon culture, and probably around the world, but there's much more documentation there. In small amounts, insufflated, that it helps, they say, with you know, basic relations.
So, just for integrating relations, which, as we know, are like, you know,
it'd be like a form of meditative practice. Like in the amounts it was used, I don't think that it was a large dose. It's more of like a resetting type of amount of like settling into Tai Chi invokes a very similar state.
Yes, Yes, reawakening the stem cells, that's a reset as well. And they talk about the DMT being a reset for the brain, even with the deep breathing, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people mention that. A lot of people, you know, reset is a word that's commonly used when people discuss their experience with all of the various entheogens.
Yeah.
Like a reset. And like you said, you experience that deep peace, the coming home. And then, you know, it doesn't just instantly fade, like we were speaking about. The integration that can take place is now, let's see, you start to feel, maybe this awakens, right, within us a deeper felt sense of subtle energy,
mm-hmm.
of connection,
yeah.
right? As I often experience, you know, is like when I was younger, I was very shut down energetically, incredibly shut down. And I would have denied any of this stuff, you know, just because it wasn't in my experience. I was very stuck in the mind identified level, you know. And so, yeah, psychedelics definitely helped to open the door. Meditation also tremendously. Chanting, various practices, spiritual practices and you know, psychological ways of working with the shadow material as well. And sort of an integration of all those things, which is kind of like what I've been working with mostly recently. Is taking, you know, aspects of the most powerful ways of working with these inner parts, you know,
mm-hmm.
and relieving the burdens that we carry, and innovating ways of using them in sequence, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful.
So now, lately what I've realized is the potency of being able to incorporate these techniques with plant medicines, such as DMT and other tryptamines, right,
mm-hmm.
is, you know, little known. It's really mm-hmm. little known. And I mean, it's known by some for sure, right?
Yeah.
But it's not really in the public speak.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember some of my first experiences with coming across concentrated plant-based, just water-based extracts of some mimosa or varola bark. The mimosa would be an NN-DMT and an NM-DMT. And the varola contains mostly 5-methoxy-DMT. But it definitely invoked my body to be able to flow with Tai Chi. Like, I'd been studying it for a while, but in just consuming small amounts of it, probably an amount that wouldn't, you know, most people would be like, oh, I didn't really get it or whatever. But it started to gently, over time, open up my pathways so that I could feel the meridians flowing.
Yes.
And that I could feel where, what was proper alignment, that it was cleaning.
Mm-hmm.
Akin to what people would that I associate with friends that are studying yoga, that have yoga teachers, that they're reminding them what proper posture is.
Yes, to get the prana moving.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I just, and again, just kind of recently, it really came to light on how powerful it is to incorporate these things when, you know, I was in the midst of a deep psilocybin trance, you know, and I took a high dose with a mind fold on, so I can keep my eyes open, but total darkness. And, you know, initially I was just kind of going within, surrendering, and allowing the medicine to do its work. Just opening, experiencing, feeling everything, you know, that comes up, but in a very open way and in a very grateful way, you know, because I can feel the stuff just coming up and being relieved and you know. So that was a very powerful aspect of it. But then I recognized, you know, at some point in time, it's kind of funny, like I had been, you know, in trance for a couple hours probably, and I had to use the bathroom. So I like, okay, I gotta respect nature. And as I get up and I start to walk and I'm so heavy, I can just barely, you know, can barely stand it. And I get back from the bathroom and I just want to instantly lay back down. But then I said, no, let me stand. Let me do some Qigong, right? And as soon as I did it, I felt this incredible, the burden increased tenfold, it seemed like, you know, my desire to collapse was increased tremendously. But as I stood there, and a moment later, the channels opened up so powerfully that it was like all this more than the support I needed to bear that. And you know, I stood there for an hour practicing, and just that was it really showed me the benefits of using both. Like the feminine is the receiving, you know, the going within and just the allowing, but then the masculine is the dynamic. And this was a way to incorporate that very powerfully, you know, still but dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's a great, great story though. Yeah. I can feel the opening in your veins, as you tell it.
Yeah, it was definitely powerful. And I knew at once, I was like, oh, this is something that I'm going to explore more and I'm going to want to share with others. And yeah, that's why we're here, man. Do we have a question for our audience?
Does anyone...
Perhaps our audience member has a question. We have an audience member today.
Oh.
We have an audience today, so anything on this topic or, you know, and could be an unrelated topic, we would like to give our audience a question. And so perhaps you have one that you'd like answered. None of you? No? No? Okay, that's fine. We can give this up.
I mean, I'm interested in people consuming tryptamines, DMT in particular, without there being any MAOIs involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm interested in the science involved in this. I think it's going to be incredibly antiviral, incredibly antibacterial. I think people chewing on the Phalaris grass, it's growing all around them on, Phalaris aquendiceae, grows to hold back the ocean from erosion. And there's lots of sources around.
I got it. This is great. So we have a question for you guys now, and we'll do the same. We'll do our own research and we'll report back on our, you know, our next podcast. But for now, do some research in your own area and find out what types of grasses and or plants that are higher in DMT alkaloids are in your area.
And the benefits that you feel from relating to them. You know, whether it's consuming them or whether it's just relating to them.
Okay.
They're in the ecosystem to invoke new information. You know, they're processing whatever the chemicals and toxins are that are around them, because they grow in the disturbed areas. And they process through it, and they're the keystone species. Like, when it's all disturbed, these are some of the first species that come in, the ones that are the most potent medicinally. And so what do we as a culture have to relate to these keystone species? Because if we are going to be on the earth any longer, we are building a new culture. Because the one that we are in is headed to in a direction that doesn't seem like it's going to be here for antiquity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good point. Too many people seem to have the short view.
Yeah. And what is the long game here? And the long game is definitely coming directly from the earth herself.
Correct. Yes. Well, that would be, it would seem, the oldest and the wisest and the most powerful of the bunch, but the most oft overlooked. So in any case, report back to us, comment below, reach out, and we will be discussing these things further in deeper matters, and also covering your questions and topics that you'd like to have, you know, discussed concerning ayahuasca, DMT, plant medicines, spirituality, and consciousness transformation. It's been a pleasure as always, Dylan.
Thank you.
And we will see you guys, or you will hear us, on an upcoming episode.
This transmission is coming to you from deep in the jungles of Central Maine.
You've been listening to
High on Spirit.